From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Germ Warfare is Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, it's Monday. It is a beautiful day at the bottom tip of the African continent. I think global cooling is heading our way because the mornings are getting a little bit darker. That's always a good sign. Clearly, Mother Nature got the memo. So much for global warming. That's going to end for a few months. Quick news. My show is changing slots from the 20th, which is, I think, what's today's date? Okay, so about a week from now. I'm going to be changing time slots. So I'll still be daily, but I'll be moving 2 hours later, which will be my time, 4 p.m. Central African time. I have no idea what's going on at the moment with time zones and daylight savings around the world. Absolutely no idea. I think the United States has shifted 1 hour. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I can't keep up with the stuff. I don't know why. Why do people change the time? I don't get it. Why don't you just wake up an hour earlier or an hour later or something? This is what I love about Africa. We're too simple to worry about things like changing the time. You know, we are more worried about other things, like, I don't know, trying not to be vaccinated en masse, you know, than to worry about what the time is. You know, oh, okay, so the sun's going to come up a little bit later. That's no problem. I'll just set my alarm. I don't have to actually have the government change the time of the entire country. I've never understood this daylight saving story. I mean, I suppose I get it in principle because you don't want to sit on the road, you know, in traffic for an hour longer in pitch black. I don't know. What's the big deal? Just cope with a little bit less sunshine. I don't know. The developed world does some strange things. This is why I do enjoy the chaos of Africa, where we are so uncomplicated in many ways, you know. Oh, all right. Let's do this. My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the Battle of Ideas.
World news reported right.
I try to find news outlets that aren't too biased.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Ben, what the hell is going on? Has your time changed now?
Yes. Yes, we went, I don't know what it is. What is it? Spring back or spring forward? No, yeah, spring forward in the spring, fall back in the fall. I mean, it's like such a simple concept, but forget it. Yeah, I think originally it was devised, just like you said, so that people have longer days in the summer, which you'd think they'd go the other way and make longer days in the winter because that's when they're so short. But I guess they just said, screw the winter. Let's just make longer days. You know, it's changing here. They said this might be the last year we do it in Canada. But they're going to stick with the savings time. They're not going to go to the original time. It has something to do with the it has something to do with the metric system. I'm not sure what, but that's.
Yeah, we go again. Metric versus imperial.
Right. Right. No, but it's better for. It's better for me right now because it's 8 o'clock as opposed to 7. So I'm a little more awake than I was before when your show started at 7.
Yeah. I mean, I had a little bit of a nervous breakdown yesterday because I suddenly realized that the times have changed and we had scheduled you for an hour earlier, which would have meant that I wouldn't have had you on.
Right. Right. You know, that was a question I was going to ask you last week. And right at the very end of the hour, I was like going, now next week or next time. But you guys sent me, or TNT sent me a notice saying 8 o'clock. So I figured it out.
But yeah, it's going to get even more complicated because now we're going to couple daylight savings with my new shift, my new slot.
Right. Right. So you'll be at 10, I assume.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yes.
Everybody should switch over to Greenwich Mean Time and just use that, which a lot of companies and things do. Because that one stays stationary.
doesn't the concept of time zones also fascinate you? I am constantly amazed by how they figured this out back in the day. There's that one little area in the world where that line does that squiggle and goes between islands or something. And you can, I don't know, I can't remember where it is. Somebody can tell me, but you can see the other side of the island or the other island or something, and it's a different day or different time zone or something.
Right. Yeah. That's somewhere out in the Pacific where the international timeline is. Yeah. This is, I have a PhD and I can't figure out the time stuff. It's just, I'm like really stupid with that. And what was the other thing? There's something else I can't deal with that's like time. But anyway, whatever. Who cares?
I love how jaded you are, Todd.
It's funny. I've been writing for Off Guardian, which is an amazing, as you know, an amazing source. And the people that comment there, I mean, there's some people that are just, a lot of people that are just really, really bright and very insightful. But it's really taught me a lot to get these comments that I would never in a million years think that what I wrote would create, you know. And they're usually way off. I mean, they're like mean and whatever. But the things that they come up with, I like, you know, I would have never thought of that in a million years. You know, I don't know. It's been an education, that's for sure.
Murray just said that the international dateline is between, what do you say, Australia and Hawaii. I'm having a look now at a map. It's an absolutely fascinating concept. It goes right sort of through the ocean, I think there to the right-hand side of New Zealand. But what's even more interesting is that it cuts between, I think, Russia and Alaska. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's so interesting.
Yeah, the history of that's probably pretty interesting. Like, who came up with that idea? Said, we got to do something about this. I mean, think about people that were sailing back at that time, you know, like Columbus type time. Like, what were they doing? I guess they just totally went by the sun, you know, which makes sense. It's like, well, the sun's here today, so that must be where we are, you know. And yesterday it was over there. Now it's here. So, yeah. But, and talk about simple, it was simple. It was simple back then. Just look at the sun and figure, you know, that it's noon. The sun is straight up. So, you know, and they couldn't communicate with me. I wonder what they thought, because they couldn't. Of course, they thought the world was flat, which it might be.
You're going to trigger a whole pile of emails now, Todd.
I'll believe anything right now. Just show me the money.
Because we all know that space is fake and gay. That's the phrase that I keep seeing.
Oh, really? I've not heard that. That's good.
You can't.
Well, so there are trigger words.
There are trigger words, yeah, Todd. Okay. Let me. Yeah. So you can't say global or the globe.
Oh, really? Okay. Right.
You can't say space or stars.
Okay. Or he or she. We can't say that. Everybody's non-binary that now. Yeah. Oh, there's lots of things you can't say. Yeah. But since we're in bizarro world, we may as well make everything up. You know. Nothing
that is
real.
Postmodern of you. How postmodern of you?
Yeah, right. I love it. it does kind of take a lot of responsibility off to not have to know anything. Like, if you don't know something, you just make it up, you know, and that's pretty liberating, you know. If I don't, gee, I don't know that, and I'll just make something up.
But that's why, Todd, I said last week to somebody, stop saying transgender or trans woman or trans man. There's no such thing. You're either a man or you are a woman. And if you are a man trying to be a woman, you are mutilating your body parts and injecting yourself with hormones, but you're still a man and you're pretending to be a woman. There's no such thing as trance. And I think we are going to get ourselves caught into a trap. We're going to get ourselves caught into a trap eventually where we are going to be saying trance.
Well, that's the whole point, isn't it?
We mustn't. Yeah. Yeah. So I think we must stop legitimizing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Normalizing it. Yeah. You know, what she said is interesting, because you wonder why it didn't go the route of saying that they were different. They were a different thing. They weren't a man or a woman. They were in between. They were a special sex that was the in between, you know, the hormones and the surgery and whatever made them something different. They weren't women or men becoming women. They were something else. But it didn't go that way. It went this way of like saying, no, we'll just put them in this category. So essentially, they're still keeping the binary category. They're still keeping it binary. And then you can move from one to the other, you know, which is weird that they whoever they are, did it that way. I wonder where the book is that has all this stuff written down. Like, says, look, this is how we're going to do it. Yeah.
When we're talking about trance, I'm okay to make an exception for Murray.
Poor Murray. He doesn't have a voice here. We should let him in.
He does have a voice, but in my ears.
I know, right?
You can't hear him.
He's like a little devil. I don't hear him.
But I mean, look, this is the big problem, though, Todd. This is what I'm starting to notice, that we legitimize a lot of things that we should not be legitimizing. Let me give an example. For example, did not want a fake vaccine passport. A lot of people said to me in the last few years, why don't you just get the fake card, then you can still travel? Well, that's legitimizing the system. And my wife and I refused to do that. So we'd rather wait until we no longer needed that.
Right. Well, no, that is one of the dilemmas of protest, essentially, is do you stand... or do you work with it in order to stay afloat? I mean, it's kind of like being a spy. You know, spies in countries pretend like they're part of that country or whatever it might be. And so they go along with everything in order not to be noticed. They don't like a Soviet spy during the Cold War didn't come into the United States and say, I'm a spy. You know, I believe in the Soviet system, you idiots. I mean, he would have been arrested or whatever. But that's what it's like. And I think we grapple with that all the time, the people on our side of the fence. It's like I went into grocery stores and went into stores with a mask on. You know, I still go into my doctor's. Well, actually, I don't. I don't wear a mask anywhere anymore. But the doctors require a mask. And I just say, screw it. I go in there without it. So I finally become brave enough. But it's more of just, well, we'll comply just to keep from making waves. And I agree. I don't think that's a good idea. I think what you did was right.
But I think also, I mean, to be fair, okay. So, I mean, nobody is this sort of perfect poster child of heroism. Okay.
Right.
Everybody had different battles to fight over the last few years, and we have many battles to fight coming. And you choose the battles that you know that you can win. For example, flying on an airplane, some of us needed to fly because driving is just too ridiculously far and expensive. And there were times where you said, okay, I'm going to put a mask on now because I cannot win this battle with the airport. But there's a difference between putting a mask on your face and injecting yourself with something.
Yes, yes. There is a huge difference. Yes. Yeah, that you know, we say, and I'm sure you've said this too, what hill are you going to die on? You know, that's a phrase you hear a lot. It's like, well, this is a hill I'm going to die on, and the vaccine is a hill I'm going to die on. I'm never, you know, they're going to have to put a boot on my head and force that thing in me before I will comply to it. And, you know, I read an article in Off Guardian that I thought was very interesting that this person, and I felt this, that the author of this article, I can't remember who it was, it was somebody I don't think I've seen a lot, but he was saying that the next phase will be something like a radiation leak or the fear of one or a nuclear blast, and they're going to force everybody to take radiation pills. And I thought that was a really smart thing to think of, because the vaccine thing for a virus is a little used up. at this point. And I think a lot of people, even if a new virus came up, I think a lot of people that complied with the first vaccine are going to like go, you know what? I don't know. I want to look into this a little bit more. But if all of a sudden the air raid sirens went off and everybody said there's a big radiation leak and you got to take these pills to keep from dying from radiation poisoning, I think a lot of people go, oh, well, you know, I'm not going to not do that. You know, that's not the saying. And, you know, the author of this article was saying, well, it is going to be the same. This is the kind of thing that's going to happen. And most people are going to do it. And I don't know. I don't think I would. Huh? Yeah, I just lost you. Didn't hear that.
No, I said that's depressing that people will still fall for the whole thing. I've just quickly saw what the time is. Let me just quickly do an ad break. I'll be back with you shortly. Thanks, Murray.
Patrick Henningsen on TNT Radio.
Right now, I guarantee you, you are being gaslit by the machine. The machine, the matrix, the mainstream media, the government media complex, whatever you want to call it, it has geared all of its communication outlets to one single talking point regarding COVID-19, vaccines, etc., Fauci, the lot. It's all about China virus. It's all about lab leak. And they want you to believe now, finally, in 2023, they want you to believe that a magic super duper virus snuck out of a refrigerator in a BSL-4 lab in Wuhan, China. And somehow, we don't know how, but we're told anyway that we need a leap of faith because the establishment needs you in that mental place, that place of fear where you're susceptible to trauma-based mind control. And that's when you're most heavily programmed.
Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
The Net Zero Con in action. Only those elites with private planes will be able to fly internally in France. There is no climate emergency. On air 24/7. This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
But Todd, have you noticed how they use invisible bogeymen to capture the minds of people? So if it's a virus, you can't see it. If it's climate change, you can't see it. Radiation, you can't see. It's always something that is, it's always invisible.
Yeah.
Terror. Yeah, this is the other one. Terror. Terror is invisible.
Yeah. Right. Right.
War on terror.
Yeah. 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 That was a really clever decision that was made at some point because, you know, the people used to be the terror before. And, you know, nations, Japanese, Chinese, whatever it might be. I mean, preferably one that didn't look like Caucasian. I mean, you've read many times about the decision to drop the bomb on Japan and not on Berlin or not on Germany was largely because it was easier to do because of the race difference. Not sure if that's documented that actually was consciously talked about, but it certainly is.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, but anyway, you're right. I mean, it's like look at 1984. The countries that they were at constant war with, Oceania or Eurasia, whatever they were called, were basically invisible. They were still countries, but nobody saw them. Nobody saw. I mean, they were fabricated. So that's the step right before choosing an invisible enemy, which is the virus or radiation. Yeah, I think you can count on that pretty much, that there will be. Of course, China is now being set up as the physical enemy with this whole leak thing that's big in the news now, that we have to go into this China, the boogeyman. I guess Putin lost his stature as the bad man of the world, and now it's China. So maybe it's both China and Russia.
conversation actually over the last few days about perhaps everything that I thought I knew about China is inverted. Because I can't come to terms with the fact that if we are going to question a lot of things about, I don't know, let's say anti-Russian propaganda, and we know that if it's coming out of the West, it's probably untrustworthy, and we must be very cautious. We need to navigate this minefield very carefully. But have you noticed, at least I have noticed, how many people refuse to let go of the bad China man, bogeyman? You know, it's... Mm-hmm. You know, they are the dragon. They are the constant evil, no matter what. But yet, everybody knows that the videos that came out of Wuhan, supposedly, of the people dropping dead in the streets, are all nonsense anyway.
Everybody knows that?
Videos.
We do.
Oh, come on. Do you think anybody actually still believes that?
Of course they do.
That's an interesting idea.
Oh, my God. Yes. I'm surprised. And I wouldn't swear because I haven't interviewed everybody in the world, but you know, I see a lot of different people every day. And whenever conversations like that come up, it's amazing to me how most people that I interact with, like in my work, and I just went to a funeral just last week and a lot of people around and talking to them, that they know almost nothing compared to what we know. Almost nothing. And they still think things like the unvaccinated will spread the virus more readily than the vaccinated. They, you know, oh yeah, I think people don't even think about stuff like that. If they see one video of people in China dropping on the street, then it's like that just stays in their head forever. It's like it doesn't ever change. But going back to the China thing, you know, that's interesting because I've always thought, and I'm assuming that other people thought this too, because back in the day when I was asleep, and like knew nothing, I always thought of China as the big sleeping tiger, that there was something about China that was big. It was always like, well, we better never get in a fight with them because they've got billions of soldiers, you know. And it was also very backward. There was something about China that it, you know, they made cheap crap they sold over here and everything. And I always felt like the big enemy that you're talking about was Russia. That Russia has been since the beginning, well, really since the Second World War, I guess since the Soviet Union, has been the enemy of the West. And when they calmed down after after the Soviet thing fell, there was a difficult, or after the Cold War, there was a difficult time where it's like, well, what can we pin on them? Because they're our enemy. What are they doing now that we can get pissed off about and point at them? And of course, this whole thing with Ukraine comes up along with a bunch of other things. You know, everybody's always, or the West has always hated Putin, and you know, he's this and he's that and whatever. But I always think of Russia as being the one that no matter what they do, they're going to be vilified. Now I do believe China's moving into that space, just like you're saying, because they are so, I mean, they become incredibly industrially powerful. And that becomes part of the common collective psyche, that they really know what they're doing as far as making money and building factories, and you know, their infrastructure is this and that. And I think suddenly, in my view, they're becoming this formidable enemy. And you know, that's what it feels like to me. Now, I don't know how many people would agree with that, because you know, it's just my view, and I don't know.
It's a difficult place right now. I have noticed huge amount of pushback. The moment you say anything even remotely positive about China, suddenly you're a shill and you're grifting for Xi Jinping, and it's just completely binary, and it's a horrible false dichotomy. People don't understand perhaps that there is a nuance. You know, nobody's saying go live in China. You know, I'm not saying it's all rainbows and unicorns, you know, and fluffy bunnies running through the meadows. But what I am saying is that perhaps the truth lies somewhere in between the fact that China is not necessarily this this overarching enemy. I mean, how many countries does China bomb or invade? Now, I'm sitting on the African continent, and I'm observing what the United States does, you know, and I just constantly see and hear about new wars.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
Afghanistan, you name it. You can, every country, you know, that Uncle Sam is going to take democracy to. Yeah. As far as I know, China's only got two military bases outside of China, and I think the US has about 850 or something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Now, there's no doubt comparing the two historically. But it's funny you'd say all that about China. I remember when the first, you know, the very first thing, I think this was in March or April of 2020, right when the whole COVID thing started, I read an article in Newsweek that essentially pointed out that the NIAID was funding gain of function research at the Wuhan lab in China. This was a whole article in Newsweek, mainstream. And I remember reading that going, wow, that's weird, you know, gee. And it was before, you know, all of the propaganda came out. Then it just disappeared. Then it's like, oh, no, it's a bat in the wet market. It's this, it's that. And so I like go, well, what about that article in Newsweek? Nobody ever mentioned it. It just disappeared. Now it's coming back up. But I remember when people would talk about, oh, it's a leak from the lab, that everybody would get all offended about, oh, well, that's just anti-China crap. You know, you're just trying to put China down. It's like, it's really offensive to the Chinese, because I think Trump called it the Chinese virus or something, or, you know, yeah. And everybody
China,
got all bent
China,
out of shape.
China.
Yeah. Right. And everybody got all bent out of shape about it. Now you're right. It's like, okay, the narrative switches over and says, now think like this. China yeah. is bad. You know, 2 weeks ago, Putin was bad. And anything he did, it's all black and white. There's no gray area at all. And no, it's just nuance, what you're yeah. saying. It's like, I'm like going, isn't the way we normally think is to understand? Like, I've had a lot to do with Russia. I've been to Russia, to Moscow about 4 or 5 times. And, you know, I did a lot of music recording there, and I got really into their history and got into them personally, you know, go out to dinner with people. They're a very interesting culture, that's for sure. But they aren't all bad. There's no question about that. I mean, maybe the
Todd,
governments
please,
have
please,
been
we don't,
in the past.
We don't deal the nuance here, okay? They're either supremely evil or they are angels, right. Okay? That's how this works.
Yeah.
It's just, it's one or
right.
zero.
Yeah, it
Hang
is.
On. Before... Before yeah. I let you continue, Murray's going to get angry. I quickly have to do headlines. I'll be back with you shortly.
TNT Radio News.
Are you ready for some awesome news?
Yes. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. Iran and Saudi Arabia have agreed to resume diplomatic relations and reopen their embassies in a landmark deal brokered by Beijing. China's condemned Japan's plans to release more than 1 million tons of radioactive water from the Fukushima nuclear plant into the ocean. And thousands of people have once again taken to the streets of Tel Aviv in what's become the biggest protest in Israeli history as demonstrators rally against the government's plan to shake up the judicial system.
Don't miss a thing. Be sure to download the TNT Radio app from either the Apple App Store or Google Play so you can easily listen live to us anywhere, anytime. Available right now to download. Keeping you up to speed on TNT Radio.
Trying to navigate this fog of propaganda is a nightmare, that's for sure, Todd. But I've noticed that particularly with this China narrative. Now, I'm not saying that communism is great. And I don't think China is terribly communist anymore. I think a lot of that is gone. I think it's more technocratic. And Patrick Wood, who's been on my show, makes a very good argument for why it's not communist anymore. And so people are still stuck in this old sort of capitalist communist dichotomy, which isn't really realistic anymore, I think. The world has shifted. But I'm not saying now suddenly I want to go and live I can't think of a city now. I've gone Beijing. There we go. Okay. Wuhan. I'm not saying that. or Wuhan.
Yeah.
But I'm not. What I am saying is that it might not be what the Western propaganda is saying. You know what I mean?
Of course not. No, it isn't at all. No. No. I've never been to China, but if China is being put through the same kind of narrative an agenda that Russia was. Like I said, I've been to Russia a bunch of times, and it's nothing at all at least socially. I mean, I've never been involved in government. I think it's dicey. They're doing business, but that's just the way things are. No, it's all so made up. And I think we see this, people on our side of the fence, see this so clearly now when we're kind of, again, I hate to keep using the phrase woken up, because, you know, we hear that over and over and over again. But when you become aware of those nuances, like you're talking about, we see it everywhere. You know, we see it in every single thing. And it's so extreme, like with this whole, when the whole Ukraine-Russia thing was really big in the news, how the Ukraine and their government and their people were, like you said, angels. There was absolutely nothing about that that could be said in a negative way. And Russia was the aggressors, horrible, hateful, blah, blah, blah. And you look at that and you go, well, that's just not possible. You know, just like you keep saying, I wouldn't necessarily endorse them. You know, Putin is clearly a thug. But come on, people, there's something on both sides of this that we need to see and we need to consider and be aware of. We as a mass of people seem to be so stupid, sorry to say, that we can't discern that there's more to it than we're being told. And that, I find that to be the most frightening thing about what's going on now. You know, because I see
exactly
it in my own personal life. You know, I'm like going, is this person on the street have enough sense not to pull out a gun and shoot me? Yeah, you know, do they have enough sense to discern what is right and what is wrong and what is dangerous and what isn't dangerous? You know, being an unvaccinated person going into a place and claiming I'm not vaccinated or not having a mask on. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if there's going to be somebody in there that's kooky. So that, a lot of that's paranoia, I know, but it's too bad that you have to think that all the time.
Let me throw a curveball at you. You just mentioned the word paranoia. And whenever the phrase paranoia or being paranoid is brought up, it's always a negative thing. There's always a connotation that isn't positive. I once upon a time had the great fortune of interviewing John McAfee, twice in fact, and he was scheduled for a third time, but then he got Epstein'd, as we all know. Now, he said to me, because everybody knows that he invented pretty much the first antivirus software. And he said to me it was because of his paranoia that he invented it, just in case somebody was going to create algorithms that were going to do bad things to computers. He wanted to create a safety mechanism. And that paranoia turned out to be correct. Let's bring it right home. The reason why we lock our front door at night is because of paranoia, just in case. I don't know about you, yeah, but in South Africa, we lock our front doors because we have a lot of crime. Maybe you don't in Canada. Really? I'm not sure no, about you, Murray.
And when I was a kid, that's paranoia. We never locked our door. Yeah. When I was growing up in the country. No, I wrote an article about this called Paranoia. Is it always so bad, or is it always bad? And you're just nailing it, exactly what I was saying. The word paranoia, I believe, and I'm not absolutely certain of this, but I think it's a clinical term. And when it's applied in a clinical way in mental health, there's a specific thing it means. It's not just worrying about somebody breaking in your house. It's an extreme. It's a psychosis. So it's turned into, in the vernacular, I mean, it's turned into a common word to describe something that really the word was not designed to describe, which is what you're saying. When it's extreme, I mean, mental health is always extreme things. It's normal behavior that's extreme. I mean, very few things in mental health are not that. Some things are not, like brain damage, autism, you know, the autism scale, all that kind of stuff. That's actually physiological. But depression is an extreme of an ordinary experience. It's not pathological to be depressed. It would be considered pathological to be depressed beyond what the circumstances are. that would cause depression. That's when you get clinically. And paranoia is the same thing. I mean, you would have to be like kooky paranoiac, like believing there's somebody following you around all the time. And if you hear a siren or something, to dive under the bed because you're afraid the police are coming to get you. You know, those are clinical versions of paranoia, but you're absolutely right. I mean, paranoia, as most people are describing it, like if they're describing it in this situation, oh, you're just paranoid. You think the government's always out to get you. That's not paranoid. That's true. You know, paranoia are things that aren't true. And it's like, sorry. Yeah, there's this little elf thing that follows me around the house. And I'm always afraid that it's behind me, and I'm always looking behind me. That's not paranoia, because I can take a picture of it. There is an elf in my house. I'm kidding. There isn't.
Gavin De Becker, who he said to me that he's going to come onto my TNT show. Now, a lot of people don't know who he is, but he wrote an incredible book called The Gift of Fear. And it's just such a remarkable series of ideas where he argues essentially that fear can also be a tool for winning. And it's something that we have to grapple with, that not everything that is bad is necessarily always bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Fear is another one. It's another word that I think is it's spread out too thin to cover too many things, you know, like in a certain spiritual perspective, we say that fear is the enemy. Fear is the thing you want to remove. And it isn't the kind of fear that, like, oh, I'm afraid that if I touch the stove, I'm going to get burned, or I'm afraid that blah, 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 whatever. That, I mean, those kinds of fears are natural and they're important to have. The kind of fear that again, is a problem is fearing something that isn't actually happening, for one thing. And the quality of the fear is different. You know, there's worry engaged in the kind of fear that can be debilitating, you know, a constant obsession with it. And then there's a kind of fear of just saying, well, you know, the storm is coming. I better, you know, close up the house and shutter the windows because I fear that my house could be destroyed by the storm. It's a very different feeling, and I'm sure you've felt the difference. And something else people say all the time, which I know personally is true, is that we fear things before they happen. And when they actually happen, we're not as fearful. That we actually come together and deal with whatever it is that's confronting us without the fear. I mean, it's a very strange thing. And I think the work is to come to a point where you can deal with everything in that way. I'm going to plan for this problem that could come up, but I'm not going to obsess over it. And when it happens, I'm going to be able to step up to the plate and deal with it. That's where fear is a problem. But
geopolitically speaking, many countries fear the United States and NATO because why? They're going to bring missiles and bombs to your country if you happen to have oil or some other, you know, CIA invested interest. However, the fear for China is, what are they going to bring? They're going to bring you high speed trains and very fast internet connections. I mean, yeah, I don't see them dropping bombs on other countries.
Well, that's also a different kind of fear. That's more. I don't think governments fear anything. I think they're all trying to figure out how to get the best of something in their view, what's best for them. And if they have to, I mean, look at what's going on in Europe with this. People talking about atomic war. Are you kidding? I mean, talk about no fear. Anybody in this country or in Russia or wherever to even mention the idea of setting off an atomic warhead. I mean... They're all doing all this as manipulation. It's all bullshit.
Let me throw a quick little curveball at you before I go to my last ad break. But what if atomic bombs don't actually exist? And I'm saying that not because I'm trying to be provocative, but I actually interviewed a fascinating professor from Canada who actually makes the point that perhaps it's also a bogeyman or a boogeyman. I don't know how to say it. Is it bogeyman or boogeyman? What's the correct way?
Either way.
I how say do you say it, Murray? Bogey. Oh, okay. I can't figure out your Aussie accent, Murray. I don't know what you're saying. Is it boogie or bogey? I don't know what Murray's saying. Hold on. Okay. Tell you what. Let me quickly do an ad break. I'll be back with you now.
With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Get woke, go broke is no joke. Just ask Silicon Valley Bank investors. For decades, the go-to bank for both high-tech startups and big tech behemoths. Recently, SBV decided it was more important to focus on LGBTF compliance and DEI compliance than with risk assessment compliance. Is this the first of a spate of big bank failures looming in our headlights? Only time will tell. It is instructive, however, that Janet Yellen said there will be no bailout for SBV investors. One concern is that if big banks fail, that could lead to currency failures. And the thought is that this crisis will be used by central banks to implement central bank digital currency, SBDC. Think it can happen? The interbank messaging company SWIFT is already moving forward on a project to build a standardized global interlinking central bank digital currency system. While we may not have accounts at Silicon Valley Bank, it's too early to say that we aren't going to be affected by its failure. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
For decades, senior government and intergovernmental organization officials have peddled fear with climate change alarmism. In June 1989, Noel Brown, director of the New York Office of the United Nations Environment Program, said that governments had a 10-year opportunity to arrest the greenhouse effect before it went beyond human control. He claimed that entire nations could be wiped off the face of the earth by rising sea levels if the warming trend was not stabilized by the year 2000. In reality, global carbon dioxide emissions from fossil fuels and industry were 62% higher in 2021 than in 1989, and sea level has barely changed.
TNT. You're with Jeremy now on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
You know, Todd, we were chatting a moment ago about the invisible threats. And if you think about Libya, there's an African country that was very quickly destroyed significantly by the US, and I think NATO, I can't remember, I'm not quite sure if NATO was involved, but certainly the US, and left the place in tatters. Then, on the other hand, you hear people saying, yes, but China is slowly colonizing Africa and taking over Africa. And maybe that's true, but the difference is that, for example, Kenya is getting high-speed train networks, and I think that's a lot better than what Libya experienced.
Yeah, yeah. So you're just going to leave it about the atomic thing.
Not quite sure where to go with that one.
Well, I'll just say one sentence. I think that's a possibility. The fact that we've seen atomic blasts means they did figure out how to do it. So that's not a mystery. But I personally, and I haven't said this anywhere because I don't want to be wrong about this. I think this is all part of the agenda to frighten everybody to think there's going to be nuclear war. I don't think that'll happen. And whether they have the weapons or not is kind of beside the point. But anyway, going back to what you're saying, I think, you know, the Soviet Union tried to do that, I believed, and in Africa. They were, you know, peacemakers in a sense. They didn't bring in communist regimes that were in alignment with the Soviet paradigm through force. They did it the way you're saying. They strengthened the infrastructure, they supported this and that. And they were fairly successful with that. As we've seen, go back into the Cold War in the 60s and 50s after Stalin died. But yeah, why not? I mean, that really is the way to do it. I'm not quite sure why the West or why the United States has not chosen. Maybe it's cheaper to drop bombs than it is to build railroads.
Somebody said to me the other day, though, that, you know, why am I so anti-US? No, I'm not anti-US. Obviously, I'm not. What I am anti is, I think, generally speaking, war, and mm-hmm. also the sort of elite cabal, the CIA, the deep state, the central bankers who have no interest in the well-being of people. That's what I'm anti. Obviously, how can you be anti, you know, the citizens? That makes no sense.
Yeah,
that's
right,
like saying, right. Well, that's like saying I'm anti-wildlife. I mean, how can you? It's ridiculous. Yeah. So, right. So I think it goes without saying that when we talk about these things, we're talking about those at the top of the pyramid.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's the systems, the government systems that are the problems. Obviously, the people for the most part don't know anything, and until the governments or those systems blind the people to stay on their side of things. That's one of the main reasons why there's an opposition. You know, if you read 1984, there's the Brotherhood or whatever it's called, there's the opposition, but it's implied that it's not even real. And that's the reason why all of us can keep doing what we're doing and nobody ever does anything about it. Because if they wiped us out, people would start wondering and questioning. I mean, we exist on this side of the fence, the thinkers and the people like you that interview and whatever, we exist so that people can reject us. That's the reason why we're here. It's so that people can say, oh, well, you're just a stupid idiot conspiracy theorist. I'm not going to listen to anything you have to say because you're one of those. And if we didn't exist, people would start going, huh, what's going on here? This is weird. But the fact that we're out there, us conspiracy theorists, it gives people the opportunity to make a choice and to say, you're a conspiracy theorist, you have nothing to say, I'm going to hear. So then they don't hear anything. And so we're an integral part. I mean, talk about controlled opposition. We're all controlled opposition, but we don't know it. You know, we don't know we're part of that agenda. And I mean, there's nothing we can do about it. Obviously, we can't like turn around and say, oh, well, okay, we'll forget it. I'm not going to do anything. But, you know, we're part of that system. It's a reason why we're not shut down the way that we could be shut down by force. You know, we're censored. Okay. But that's passive. Censoring is passive. It's not somebody coming into our house and shooting us in the head. You know, that's a little different. And so I wanted to talk to you about it, but we don't have time. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
Hang on. Yes, a meta question for you. And this could trigger our next conversation. So something to think about. And
okay,
Murray, think about this one also. What is worse, top-down imposed censorship or self-censorship?
Well, define them. I'm not sure what you mean.
If I'm too scared to talk about something, I simply censor myself. I don't talk about it.
Because you're afraid?
There could be any reason, but the point is that I'm self-censoring. I'm not proceeding with this particular thought.
Okay.
Or imposed censorship, like we all know, you know, YouTube and the government and the state, etc. So out of those two, which is worse?
You want me to answer that? What I think? I would think. I mean, from a philosophical point of view, I certainly think self-censorship is worse. Top-down censorship creates an enemy. It creates a bogeyman, the government or whoever is censoring. So you can fight against that. The self-censoring doesn't create anything you can fight. It's just a silence. And I think this happens. It certainly happened in any totalitarian regime, and Nazi Germany reading a very lengthy book about that. And it's interesting how the fear of the government was so powerful that people would not even imply, like in conversation, that they had anything against it. And you know, we see this, we hear about this in the Soviet Union during the height of the Soviet Union with Stalin's purges. It's like you couldn't say anything. And even if you didn't say anything, there was a real good chance you were going to get carted away and shot. So that kind of fear, self-censorship, and I think we're headed toward that. I think at the height of this
this drive to wherever we're going with this global rule, or I can't say global, but whatever you want to call it, whatever it is, flat earth rule.
Worldwide.
Yeah, worldwide. There you go. Better. we're definitely headed toward that. It's hard to say. Again, it's more like 1984, I think, or actually more like Brave New World is our first phase, that where people just become so anesthetized that they don't even think about self-censoring. Because there's nothing to censor. They're so vapid in what's in their head, they don't think about it. I think we're the ones that can fall into the trap of self-censorship because we have something to say.
Sorry, I'm interrupting, but our time is running out. And I quickly want to give an example of self-censor. As you know, I'm a cartoonist by profession as well. And something I can tell you that cartoonists do is self-censor a lot. Let me give you a real world example. Very few cartoonists will now depict Muhammad.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a form of self-censorship.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah. No, I hear you. And isn't the whole world being set up for self-censorship? Fear of offending people, fear of making fun of. Certainly comics and cartoonists, you guys must really... You're the first front that's hitting this really hard. This restriction of what used to be the standard thing you did was making fun of people and making fun of situations and whatever. And you're not allowed to do that anymore. So yeah, absolutely. But that's all part of the agenda, again, is to put everybody in this state where they can't turn around and say anything. They can't say anything about what they think and what they feel about things with fear of offending the cancel culture, you know, and getting canceled.
Yeah.
So absolutely.
It's a great comment here in the live chat by Jib. He says, if you self-censor, it is because of imposed censorship.
That's a good point. Yeah. I mean, why else would you do it if there wasn't consequences for it? And the consequences
I'm not saying that self-censorship is always a bad thing. For example, you're not going to walk up to an old lady sitting in the train and start swearing at her. There's also something to do with decorum and being polite and niceness, right? I don't want to self-censor and this is who I am. Well, if you're going to be a total dickhead, then that's a whole different conversation. But nobody does that. You know, there is a difference in censorship and also just being decent.
Yeah, because that kind of thing's irrelevant. I mean, who cares about offending a little old lady? Okay. No, I didn't mean it. That didn't come out right. I'm just saying it's not. Yeah, who cares? But right. It didn't come out right. I should have self-censored. But I think you know what I mean. It's not relevant to do that. And the dickhead part is important because it's just like in mental health. It's like if you interject a dickhead element or an angry element or a violent element, you're dealing with something that isn't the same thing. It's different than going up to somebody and expressing, you know, I've been thinking the other day about da 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 da, or not thinking that. And especially with a comedian or cartoonist, you know, you are poking at something and making it a bigger than life thing in order for people to notice the irony or the cleverness in it.
I just noticed the time, Todd. Murray just reminded me as well. So unfortunately, our time is against us. Very, very quickly, how can I follow your work?
On shrewviews.com. It's my Substack. I do a lot of writing there. I have a great following of people that talk and whatever. And that's Shrew Views, like the little animal shrew, and views, all one word, www.shrewviews.com. Love to see you there.
Okay, Todd, as always, thank you for joining me. I think the next time you and I chat is going to be slightly different time slot. Please don't forget. Good luck with this ridiculous daylight savings adjustments.
Okay, yeah, we'll handle it. It's kind of weird, but we're good. Thank you.
Said,
loved
yeah,
it.
Yeah, me too, as always. As I said, you're on the African continent, we keep things uncomplicated. We don't quite know how to do the whole daylight savings thing, so we just wake up earlier.
That's right.
Anyway, Todd Hayen, thank you for joining me in the trenches. And thank you to Murray for making me sound awful, as always. I always love having Murray around. I think that's all my housekeeping. I don't have any other housekeeping, so I think I'm going to go. All right, my name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the Battle of Ideas.